Hanged Man, Part 3. When Ray wakes up the next morning, he's aching and happy and entirely fucked out, and he grabs Fraser's face in his cum-sticky hands and kisses him for a really long time, because he figures, hey, he probably won't see him for a couple of days. But he's wrong about that. It's 2:30 when Welsh calls out, Vecchio! And when Ray pokes his head into the office, Welsh tells him that he's the lucky winner of a murder investigation down in Chinatown, and to call Fraser, please, because Fraser speaks Chinese. So he calls Fraser from his desk phone and tries to fill his voice with a lot of, this is serious cop business, and no trace of, God, I had such a good time fucking you last night. Fraser, Ray barks when Fraser picks up the phone. I got a body on the pavement, and it's clear enough, isn't it, that he means a dead body? And not his body, because... Who's been killed? Fraser asks quietly. And that's good. Fraser's got it. That whole respect for the dead thing. I don't know, just some Chinese guy. And the minute he's saying it, he wants to snatch those words back. Dewey's not even here, so who's he trying to impress? Except what's the opposite of impress, like when you want to act like an asshole? Depress? He's sure the fuck depressing himself. Welsh wants you on it. Ray adds quickly, because you speak Chinese. You're like our Chinese cultural liaison or something. Fraser doesn't answer, and Ray wonders if he's depressed Fraser, too, or if Fraser understands, or... Do you want me to meet you there? Fraser asks, finally. And okay, yeah, maybe it's good for Fraser to meet him at the scene, because he doesn't think he can be alone in a car with Fraser right now. Yeah, and even he can hear the relief in his own voice. Yeah, meet me down at 260 South Wentworth. And he doesn't let himself ask how Fraser's going to get there, because it's not like Fraser has a car, but his thigh muscles are still aching from supporting Fraser's weight and fucking him, and so he needs a little more time to get his head together. Plus, Fraser's resourceful. Fraser will get there. Fraser gets there all right. Fraser gets there first. Ray drives his Chevy slowly past the Sun Tong Food Market, and sees Fraser standing outside under the canvas awning, surrounded by barrels of weird-looking fruit and long, gray fishes spread out on trays of ice. A couple of uniforms are stringing yellow crime scene tape around the perimeter, and some EMTs are wheeling a body out toward an ambulance. Fraser's already talking to a tiny Chinese woman, wearing a long, disgustingly stained apron. She's sobbing and gesticulating toward the already bagged body. Fraser listens intently and nods sympathetically at intervals, and it occurs to Ray that Fraser looks entirely at home, surrounded by Chinese reds and yellows and dead fish. At the end of the block, Ray pulls the Chevy over beside a fire hydrant and checks his pocket for his badge, preparing to take over as the ranking officer on the scene. Then he's instinctively ducking, jerking forward, and holy fuck, those are gunshots, and not just, that's a machine gun, and he can hear glass shattering. And all he can see is Fraser standing there, bright as a Chinese dragon and surrounded by dead fish. In a flash, he is out of the car and running up the sidewalk, gun drawn and yanking his glasses out of his pocket with his free hand. People are running past him, running away, and dimly, Ray hears the sound of screaming and then another burst of automatic gunfire. There's nobody immediately visible at the front of the market, but the front windows have been blown out and the sidewalk glitters with broken glass. Broken glass and scattered ice and smashed crates of vegetables and dead fish, looking up at him with their dead eyes. A long black limo is pulling away with a screech of tires, and instantly Ray runs after it, gun raised, having somehow gotten his glasses onto his face, and bang! He shoots out the front tire and the limo fishtails, its back end smashing into a dirty white delivery van, double parked, further along up the narrow street. The limo keeps limping along, and Ray runs toward it, flanked now by uniformed cops on either side of him, who found either their guns, or their balls, or both. But Ray's mind is on Fraser. Where the fuck is Fraser? Have they shot Fraser? Even as he races forward and squeezes off another round at the limo, another tire blows out, and the limo grinds to a stop. Ray slows to a jog as the window opens and the long, metallic black barrel of a gun points out. Get down! Ray yells at the uniforms, and jerks sideways towards a parked car for cover, just as the gun goes off in a rapid-fire display of smoke and sparks, spent casings arcing out to the side. Ray feels a sudden, sharp burning in his arm, and then he's crushed hard into the metal chassis of a car, and rolled up and over the trunk and crashing down onto the sidewalk on the other side. Ow! Fucking hurts his arm, and he's landed wrong. But he's alive. And a second later, he's peering over the car, clutching his bicep, holding his gun, just in time to see Fraser barrel full tilt toward the front of the limo. The gunman's not looking in the right direction. He's looking back at the store. But the driver must see Fraser, because he blows his horn. Honk! But too late. Fraser's leaping over onto the hood and running up over the top of the limo and dropping down out of sight through the sunroof, and Ray's on his feet because the gun barrel seems stuck in the window, but God help Fraser if he... A moment later, the back door opens and the gunman, a young man in a black suit, falls onto the asphalt, unconscious. Ray runs to the driver's side door, opens it, and drags the driver out onto the street, pointing a gun at his head. The two uniforms are back, and one of them covers the two assailants, while the other searches and cuffs them. Ray's vision is still contracted to pinpricks, the crucial factors, two gunmen, two guns. Heart beating wildly, he tries to focus on the larger picture. His right sleeve is bloody, he's been shot in the arm, he thinks. His right leg is throbbing, sprained but not broken, or he wouldn't be standing on it. Fraser's sitting half inside and half outside the car, and he looks flushed and kind of dazed. His face is scratched up, and his uniform is stained and ripped in a couple of places. Left elbow, right knee, and glittering with what Ray realizes is broken glass. A moment later, Ray smells the first pungent whiff of fish. Fraser's eyes slowly widen. Ray, you've been shot. Ray looks down at where he's clutching his bicep and sees blood welling between his fingers. Yeah, but it's not... I don't think it's bad. Fraser raises his arm and reaches for him, and without thinking, Ray steps back. Fraser looks shocked for a moment, but only a moment, and then he's nodding and pulling his arm back guiltily like he did something he ought to be ashamed of. Ray feels his stomach clench, because God damn it, how can they be living like this? They killed Shi Kairui just now, Fraser says quietly, looking away. I pulled his sister out of the line of fire, but Shi Kairui was killed. Their older brother Kaji was killed an hour ago. The three of them ran the shop after their parents' death. Oh. Ray doesn't know what to think about that. It's like he can't make himself feel anything about that. Then, almost like a rebuke, Ray hears a series of high-pitched screams, and suddenly he's dizzy, maybe from blood loss, maybe from the fact that the Chinese mafia has just shot a guy right under the noses of two uniformed cops, a police detective, and a Mountie. They didn't even wait for the EMTs to take the other body away. And Ray suddenly has to brace himself against the car or fall over. We better get the sister into witness protection, Ray says, stupidly. And fast. Yeah, Fraser says slowly, and then he adds, I think you need a doctor, Ray. And then, more softly, I'm going to need to see you later. Yes, Ray says, and then he sags back against the car, clutching his bleeding arm, while Fraser runs down the street toward the ambulance. The rest of the day is taken up with hospitals and reports. Ray sits in the trauma ward and dictates a report over the phone to Franny while the doctors clean up the gash in his arm and give him 15 fucking stitches. Jesus. Afterwards, he swallows a couple of Percocets, lies back on the padded surgical table, and has an increasingly incoherent conversation with Lieutenant Welsh about getting the woman Fraser saved. What was her name? Shi Kairu? Or was that her brother? Taken into custody. Okay there, detective, Welsh says finally, sounding weirdly exasperated. You just lie down for a while. Fraser's coming to get you. Ray doesn't remember hanging up the phone, and he doesn't remember falling asleep, but when he opens his eyes again, the phone is back in its cradle, and Fraser is standing over him. For a moment, Ray's paralyzed with fear or Percocets or something, because which Fraser is this? This Fraser is dressed in jeans and a polo shirt. But his face is all scratched up like the Fraser who's his partner, and... Ray, Fraser says in a really soothing voice, and Ray takes a couple of deep breaths and tries to get a grip. Are you feeling all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. They gave me a couple happy pills. Made me dopey.
Ray sits up and taps his forehead with the heel of his good hand a couple of times to make the point. Brain working even less well than normal.
What about your arm? Fraser asks.
It's fine. It's like a groove, Ray says, illustrating by drawing his index finger underneath the white bandage. Like someone underlined my tattoo with a Bowie knife. It aches a little. Burns a little. Nothing I can't handle.
Come on, Fraser says. This guy who isn't quite his partner and isn't quite the guy he's fucking. I've checked you out. Your car is waiting downstairs.
Fraser insists on driving the Chevy, and it's weird to see him in the driver's seat. Fraser drives with his full concentration on the road, and Ray wonders if it's hard for him to drive in the city with all the traffic and the jaywalkers and fucking roller skaters and all the other people he almost hits every day. Then Fraser surprises him by talking.
I should take you home, he says without taking his eyes from the road, but I'm not going to.
And Fraser sounds grimly determined, like he's expecting an argument.
Okay, Ray says hastily. He's not sure why this is important, but he'll do whatever Fraser wants.
Okay, Fraser repeats firmly, like he's just won a major concession.
I mean, he adds abruptly, and normally Ray's driving, so he's just glancing at Fraser in between lights. But now Ray's in the passenger seat, and he can see the stress on Fraser's face, the tightness around his mouth, the way he seems to be steeling himself to talk.
We don't have to. It isn't because I want. It's not for that.
And if Fraser cuts himself off 3 times in a row, he's probably talking about sex.
Okay, sure, Ray assures him. And wow, it's weird to be the rational one in the car. Maybe it comes with the seat.
Today was hard. And
Fraser's hands are white-knuckled on the wheel. You got shot, Ray.
And suddenly, Ray remembers, viscerally, in his guts, sitting just where Fraser's sitting, and hearing gunfire, and being sure that Fraser was dead. Suddenly, he can't speak, because he knows that if he starts talking, he's not going to be able to stop. So he turns his face to the window, and watches the dark streets roll by.
We're almost there, Ray says quietly, finally.
Hang on.
Fraser parks right up the street from the Ashland, and then says to Ray, Are you all right to go up on your own?
Yeah, Ray says, frowning. Sure, but
I'll be there in 2 shakes of a lamb's tail. They get out of the car, and Fraser jogs up the block and disappears. Ray sighs and trudges towards Junior's liquor store. He debates maybe buying a bottle of scotch before remembering that he's already on medication. Instead, body aching, he climbs the steps and opens the Ashland stenciled door. The old guy's on tonight, and he squints at Ray as he passes him the key. Ray ignores him and makes his way to 2B, which is beginning to feel maybe too much like home. He takes off his jacket really, really carefully, then drops it onto the chair. He sits on the side of the bed, takes off his ankle boots, and is just about to let himself fall backwards when he catches a glimpse of himself in the mirror. He looks pale, old. Exhausted. There are dark circles under his eyes. His roots are dark. He looks like shit. Careful of his arm, Ray lies backward onto the bed and closes his eyes. A few minutes later, he hears the door open. Fraser's arrived, and he's got a black duffel bag slung over his shoulder and 2 paper grocery bags. Suddenly, Ray's drooling. He can smell the food from here, and he sits up. Fraser kicks the door closed behind him.
Here, he says, handing one of the paper bags to Ray, who takes it eagerly. A plastic tub, hot, full of some kind of soup, and a couple of paper cartons of Chinese food. Fraser's let the duffel bag, a familiar-looking duffel bag, slide off his shoulder, wincing as it thumps to the floor. Ray scooches backwards, clutching his soup in his hands.
That bag, he says, carefully peeling the top back. It's mine, right?
Yes, I took the liberty, Fraser says, towing his sneakers off and letting them drop to the floor before kneeing his way onto the bedspread beside Ray. Of stopping by your apartment and picking up a few things. Pajamas, shaving kit, hair gel.
Ray stares down into the warm yellow noodle soup he's holding, and his insides feel as warm as his hands, because fuck, Fraser brought him his hair gel. Ray picks up a white plastic spoon and begins to eat, watching Fraser open one of the white cartons and slurp up long,
thick noodles really skillfully with chopsticks. They don't talk, but Fraser's leg is pressed against his, and now he's warm at 3 points of contact. Midway through the meal, Fraser offers him the noodles, and Ray exchanges it for what's left of the soup, and they both just keep eating. Afterwards, Fraser throws out the remains of dinner while Ray strips out of his undershirt and dirty jeans. His blood-drenched shirt was thrown out of the hospital. He's got a bruise on his left side, where he banged into the car, and his knee is swollen, where he twisted it when he landed. Ray turns to reach for the pair of clean sweatpants Fraser brought him, and sees Fraser staring at him. A moment later, Fraser reaches into the duffel bag and wordlessly pulls out a roll of flesh-colored Ace bandage. "Come here," Fraser says quietly, and Ray hesitates for a moment. He's naked, before going over to Fraser, who sits him down on the bed before kneeling on the thin carpet and bandaging up his knee. His arm is singing with pain, and his knee is aching, but still, being naked and having Fraser kneeling in front of him does something to him, and he feels himself helplessly hardening. Fraser finishes wrapping his knee, and Ray can't help it. He reaches out and grabs Fraser's shoulder with one hand and his erect cock with the other. But Fraser winces. Not much of a wince, but it's enough to stop Ray cold. What the hell made him think he could just point his dick at Benton Fraser's mouth? Except of course it's not that. Because this isn't the first time Fraser's winced tonight, is it? And then Ray gently reaches out with both hands and carefully tugs Fraser's gray polo shirt up off his shoulders. Fraser resists for a second and then relents and raises his arms, and when the shirt comes off, Ray sees that Fraser's shoulders and chest are dappled with bruises. "Shit," Ray hisses, and Fraser says in that goddamned completely earnest way of his, "It's all right, I heal fast." Still, Fraser winces again when Ray's hand ghosts over the yellow and black bruise on his shoulder. This came from what? "Crate. Fell on me when..." Fraser trails off, and his palm is skimming up Ray's pale, scarred leg, making the rough hairs stand on end. Fraser bypasses Ray's cock, which is softened at the sight of all those broken blood vessels, and slides up Ray's own bruised side instead. "What about this?" Fraser murmurs. Ray shivers at Fraser's touch and tries to figure out how much he can say without bringing Vecchio and the Mountie into it. "Banged into a car," he says finally. "And geez, talking feels so fucking dangerous." "Ah." Fraser's hand feels wonderfully cool against his skin, and Ray suddenly realizes that Fraser's bruise is burning under his hand. The contrast shouldn't, but it does, and his cock is getting hard again. Fraser licks his lips and leans forward, but stops with his mouth so close to Ray's dick that when he speaks, he breathes hot air against Ray's cockhead, and Ray shivers. "Touch my hair," Fraser whispers, and then Ray's dick is sliding into his hot, wet mouth. Ray grabs Fraser's thick hair with his free hand, the other clamping down involuntarily on Fraser's bruised shoulder. Fraser whimpers and clutches Ray's side, and Christ, that hurts! And suddenly Ray's panting and thrusting up into Fraser's mouth, dizzy with pain, or maybe it's pleasure, because it feels good, too. He tightens the hand in Fraser's hair and begins to fuck Fraser's face, panting, turning to gasping, straining his already sore arm. Fraser keeps sucking and then surprises Ray by twisting his head to the side, winding his hair more tightly around Ray's fingers. Fraser's making soft pleasure pain noises, and the vibrations are pulsing up Ray's cock. His spine is melting, his balls feel hard and tight, and then he's falling backwards onto the bed. He's been shoved backwards, and hell, he's probably ripped a handful of Fraser's hair out by the roots. Fraser's got an arm under his leg, the leg with the Ace bandage wrapped round it, and Fraser's pulling it up and over his shoulder. Ray still feels the hot, wet suction of Fraser's mouth, and then suddenly he feels Fraser's fingers roughly shoving into him, and God, if Fraser couldn't touch him this afternoon, he is sure motherfucking making up for it now. "Yeah," Ray gasps into the stucco ceiling. "Hurt me, just a little." And Fraser hurts him, just a little. And he comes. When he wakes up the next morning, Fraser's gone, and Ray worries about that until he notices the blanket that's been tucked up around his shoulders, and the note on the pillow, "Stay in bed as long as you can." So he stays in bed as long as he can, and then he gets up and drives the Chevy back to his own apartment. But it's like a place he doesn't recognize anymore, like a stranger lives there. Plus, it smells funny. Which is something, coming from a guy who's been fucking his brains out in a men's hotel, no problemo. What he ought to do is take a Percocet and lie down on the sofa, fall asleep watching ESPN. But instead he hobbles around the apartment and starts throwing things away. He starts with the food in the fridge, cause when's the last time he even looked in his fridge? And dumps everything, including a number of really scary-looking Tupperwares and takeout containers. Then he throws out the newspapers and magazines and empty soda cans on the coffee table. And that's all normal enough. Except suddenly that's not enough, and he starts throwing out all the boxes of cereal on the counter and the pile of mail on the kitchen table. Union dues, 401k statement, gas bill, insurance payment, coupon for 10% off at the hardware store, fuck it all. And the scraps of paper sitting near the telephone, because they're not people he ever wants to call back anyway. Then even that's not enough, and he's throwing out not just the paper filter and the grounds from the coffee machine, which has grown a cover of white mold, but the whole fucking coffee machine, and all those crapola sugar, coffee, and tea canisters that God knows who, his mother, gave him, and that are ugly and useless, and the 10,000 ketchup, mustard, and soy sauce packages he's been saving maybe for the next Great Depression. He throws out his wicker odds and ends basket, because why is he saving his old keys and broken fuses, and a million extra buttons for shirts in their tiny plastic bags? He throws away all the videotapes scattered in front of the television because they're not labeled, and he can't imagine what the fuck he was taping or why he'd ever want to watch it again anyway. But he knows he's gone too far when he starts throwing out his framed pictures of Stella, but he can't stop. Stella in 1975, wearing a pointy collared nylon shirt. Stella and him at the cabin in Wisconsin in 1984. Wearing shorts and grinning and sunburned almost out of all recognition. Stella in a cream blouse and a pearl necklace, 1995. A woman he's married to and doesn't even like. The picture frames shatter as he hurls them into the trash, and he almost goes back for the early one, 1975, before defiantly thinking, screw it. By the time he looks around at the empty counters and the clean tabletops and the stripped bed, he can't remember when he last changed his sheets or towels. And the pile of black plastic garbage bags stacked in the hallway. He fucking needs a Percocet, because his body is shrieking with pain and he's on the verge of tears. The bandage on his arm is soaked through with blood, but he can't be bothered to change it. And he sits down on the leather sofa and dry swallows three pills, and, other than the occasional hiccuping sob, largely manages to ignore the fact that he's crying through most of the Jefferson versus Wallace fight, which ends with an unexpected knockout in the middle of the sixth. They find it's easier to work together as little as possible, but sometimes it's just necessary. Ray tries to handle most of the routine stuff himself. Drugs, gang shootouts, your normal urban crime thing, and calls Fraser only when the case is puzzling. Like when those four high school cheerleaders get kidnapped, or when that billionaire fakes his own death, or when that con artist swindles those poor Hispanic mothers down on the south side. Even then, he usually tries to handle it on his own. Hola! Mi nombre es Ray Vecchio. E como? Until Welsh sighs and says, look, you might want to bring Fraser in on this. Yeah, good idea, he says, and calls the consulate. And Fraser makes like Ricky Ricardo or Ricky Martin or whatever the fuck.
Señora Sánchez, por favor, ¿podría usted describir el hombre que usted vio?
It's La Vida Loca, baby. Later that night, he's fucking Fraser on the olive-green bedspread when he grabs Fraser's hands, drags his arms up over his head, and holds them there. Fraser groans, closes his eyes, and comes with a heaving shudder. Ray decides that he likes the way Fraser looks, all stretched out beneath him like that. The indentation of each rib, the soft brown armpit hair, the twist of wiry muscles in Fraser's arms, and so he handcuffs Fraser to the headboard and keeps fucking him. The next morning, Ray sees faint pink chafe marks around Fraser's wrists. Still, Fraser won't let Ray get out of bed. He just keeps kissing and kissing him. Ray finds it's best to go home as infrequently as possible. The apartment feels weirdly vacant, and it's growing dusty from neglect. Ray unplugs the answering machine, because he keeps forgetting to check it. He thinks about selling his television set. He thinks about getting a smaller place. A studio, maybe. All he really needs is a place to store his clothes. He's not the only one coming to hate his living situation. Fraser, maybe sick of Inspector Thatcher's constant prying, doesn't spend a single minute more in the consulate than he has to. Fraser's jacket pockets are full of ticket stubs to movies Ray's never heard of. Vivir sa vie, Rashomon, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Jules and Jim, It Happened One Night. Ray frequently finds him sitting near the duck pond in the park, or walking along the lakefront late at night. One night, it takes Ray 2 hours to find him, but eventually he sees Fraser coming out of the Chicago Public Library, whose reading room, it turns out, is open till 10 p.m. on Thursday. Heart pounding with relief, Ray honks his horn to get Fraser's attention and rolls down the window when Fraser approaches. "Get in the car, Fraser." Fraser gets in the car. That night, Fraser pants and strokes Ray's gel-spiked head while Ray gives him head for, well, for a pretty long time, long enough that Ray's chin is streaked with drool and Fraser's cock is almost chafed from all the attention. Still, Fraser seems to really, really like having his dick sucked based on the unholy noises he's making and the way he's babbling. "Ray, oh yes, oh yes, oh dear God!" It's maybe the longest conversation they've had in weeks. The next morning, old guy's on duty at the desk downstairs, and he bangs on the glass as Ray heads towards the door, head down and collar turned up. Ray turns and makes an impatient gesture, and the old guy grins crookedly and offers him a discounted weekly rate. Outside the Ashland, they barely speak to each other. Inside the Ashland, they know the deepest, most intimate parts of each other's minds. Outside, they haven't had so much as a dinner together for months. Inside, they have almost no secrets left. In the Ashland, Ray knows that most of Fraser's kinks have to do with being restrained, which he didn't understand at first, but now sees as a part of Fraser's war against loneliness. Fraser wants to be touched. Fraser wants to be held. Fraser wants to be held down. Inside, Ray babbles his every sexual desire to Fraser, because outside, he's got all the shame he can stand. If Benton Fraser wants to be touched, then Ray Kowalski wants to be known, and so he doesn't censor himself with Fraser. He tells Fraser his every lust, his every longing, every secret of his heart. Fraser doesn't judge him for it. One day, Ray, near coming, gasps, "I need you to fuck me with something!" And the next time they're at the Ashland, resourceful Fraser comes through for him. Fraser pulls something carefully wrapped in an old, soft-looking piece of cloth out of his pocket. It's about the width of his thumb, white and 6 inches long, carved maybe out of ivory, or something like ivory. It tapers a little at one end, and it could maybe be a swizzle stick, except that Ray's betting you don't put this thing into your drink. He looks at it for a long moment, at its complicated etchings, its raised bumps and knobs, and then says breathlessly, "Yeah, okay, put it in me." Fraser puts it in him, and fuck, holy fuck, that touches every good place inside of him. Fraser watches him worriedly for a moment, and then wraps strong arms around him, holding him close as he thrashes and writhes. One random Tuesday, Welch calls out, "Vecchio!" and it's not what he expects.
Ray grabs the jams on each side of Welch's door,
and almost lets himself fall through, using his hands to stop himself. "Yo, Lieutenant," he says. But Welch is looking at him with an expression he doesn't recognize,
and he's seen a lot of expressions on that broad face in the almost 20 years they've known each other.
Scorn, exasperation, grief, fury, pride sometimes even, although Welch tends to try to camouflage that with gruff, backhanded compliments like, "You know, that was not even bad." Still, though, Welch picked him for this covering for Vecchio thing, and while most of the time he thinks it was Welch throwing him a bone, because God knows he was pitiable after Stella. God knows he needed a break after Stella. Some days he sees a weird, smug look on Welch's face, and thinks that maybe he was the right guy for this, too. But right now, Welch just looks thoughtful, and he says, in his person voice, not his lieutenant's voice, "6 o'clock, be ready to leave. I'm taking you somewhere." And okay, it sounds like a request, but it's clearly an order. So Ray nods and says, "Okay." 6 o'clock comes, and Welch comes out of his office in his heavy wool coat and stands there. Ray leaps up and grabs his own coat and scarf off the stand and sets off after Welch, who's already heading grimly down the hall. Ray scrambles to catch up with him, then keeps pace as they head toward the glass door. Where are we going? Ray asks. Welsh doesn't answer. Instead, he moves towards his blue departmental sedan, and Ray hesitates for just a second before getting into the passenger seat and strapping himself in. It reminds him, suddenly, strangely, of being with his dad, of going to car shows or swap meets or a parts search at the dump early on Saturday morning. Stuck in the car with this silent, masculine presence who might not acknowledge you the whole day, but the honor was just in being there, in being picked to be there. Welsh turns the car downtown, and for 10 minutes or so, Ray's heart is pounding against his ribs like a motherfucker, because Welsh is driving him toward the Ashland, and Ray's sure he knows. Ray's brain is spinning. He's trying to figure out whether he should say something, be proactive about it, the best defense being a good offense, or just apologize, or maybe try to explain. Look, I don't know how it happened. It just happened. And I've been trying, we've been trying, you know, to keep it out of the office, to not let it affect our, my, performance. But just as he's about to blurt out these fevered words, Welsh takes a left and begins to drive west. And Christ, guilty much, Kowalski? He's relieved, but he feels weak, exhausted by the adrenaline seeping out of his system. Welsh finally parks the car and turns to him and frowns, and Ray bets he looks like shit. Come on, Welsh says curtly. Let's get a drink. He follows Welsh up the street to a bar he's never been to, and duh, he's betting that's why Welsh picked it. He follows Welsh through the battered wooden door to the ancient, beer-soaked interior. He doesn't drink there. Nobody he knows drinks there, and that's exactly the point. Amazing how far you've got to go from the 2-7 to get a little fucking privacy. Welsh jerks his head to a high-backed wooden booth in the corner of the room,
and the wood has been carved and marked up with what must be 40 years of drunken graffiti.
1,000 names and 1,000 iterations of Anna loves Joshen, and Enrico was here, and ruder come-ons like looking for a fuck, and love your cunt. The waitress brings over a pitcher of beer and 2 pint glasses, and Ray looks down at the table and reads, I fucked your mother, and underneath this, in another hand, go home, Dad, you're drunk. Ray lets Welsh pour them each a glass of beer. He's realized that his role is to sit here and shut up, just like when he was a kid. Welsh picks up his foaming pint, licks his lips, and says, cheers. And Ray gently taps their glasses together. The beer is cold and uncommonly good, even in a town known for good beer. Must be one of those old German places that's been here forever, from when the Germans worked the yards. Welsh puts down his half-empty glass and slowly moves it through a wet patch on the scarred tabletop. So look, I don't know what's going on with you and Fraser. Christ, this is it. Ambushed. His heart kickstarts into high gear, and he's babbling before he even realizes what he's saying. There's nothing going on between me and Fraser, he says with a nervous shrug. Deny everything. And his leg is jittering wildly under the table. Up and down, up and down. In fact, I hardly seen him lately. The Ice Queen must be working him pretty hard over the consulate. He hardly ever comes down to the... But he's dancing to the wrong song. Welsh's mouth has tightened up, and he's nodding. And shit, fuck, he's an idiot. Yeah, Welsh rumbles quietly, moving his glass back and forth, back and forth. I noticed that. I wasn't sure if it was temporary, permanent, what. Welsh is watching the half-full glass and not looking at Ray. And man, that's a kindness, because Ray can't seem to pull himself together. He feels like he's shitting out his guts. Figured you maybe had a falling out, Welsh says, and his shrug is a long, slow wave through the meat of his shoulder. You and him have had your differences, after all. And suddenly Welsh is fighting a smile so hard that his lips are pursed tight. A lot of people thought you wouldn't make it with Fraser. Figured you'd kill him, or he'd kill you. Now Welsh glances up, and Ray sees that smug, suppressed smile. My money was on you, for what it's worth. He's probably the better fighter, but he hasn't got your killer instinct. Thanks. Ray feels lost in this conversation, totally adrift. I think. Still, Welsh continues, heaving his bulk backwards and against the high-backed booth. You made a really good go of it, you and him. All in all, you were probably my best team. And Ray doesn't know what shocks him more, the unqualified nature of the compliment, or Welsh's use of the past tense. Not that that's so much to be proud of, Welsh says, reaching for his glass. And okay, here's the backslap.
in that group of freaks and whack jobs, but there you go. Still, nothing lasts forever, Welsh says, and drinks like it's a toast. Ray feels like he's at his own funeral. Welsh puts down the glass and reaches for the heavy plastic pitcher. He fills his own glass and then tops up Ray's, which is almost full. Drink up, Welsh says gruffly. You're not driving. Ray blindly picks up the glass and drinks from it. Beer. Cold, smooth, good. I just wanted to talk to you before I do anything permanent, Welsh says, and Ray keeps drinking, drinks faster, wants it to go to his head. It's not like I have anybody in mind yet. And it takes Ray a second to realize who that anybody is. Another partner. It's got to be the right type, Welsh muses, stroking the underside of his chin, which rasps against his fingers with 5 o'clock shadow. Somebody more methodical and diplomatic, less prone to fly off the handle, less violent and more verbal, because you're not the most talkative bastard to ever walk the earth. And fuck, that's Fraser, except then Welsh says, somebody like Elaine, when she's ready. Or supposedly there's a really talented guy coming up over at the 1-9, a lot of brains, but no instinct. It takes him a moment to realize that the beer is gone, and he refills his glass with shaking fingers. What if I don't want another partner? Welsh shrugs again and considers this. Well, I mean, that's up to you. First of all, there's nobody saying you gotta stay in the 2-7. I pulled you in because your predecessor, Ray Vecchio I, and there's always a dryness in Welsh's tone when he talks about Vecchio, was known for palling around with a Mountie, so we needed somebody to pal around with a Mountie. Now, though, hell, we could transfer Vecchio to Mars, and you can go wherever you want. So that's an option. Welsh pauses to take another long draught of his beer, then wipes his lips with the back of his hand. But the other thing is, you want to try working things out with Fraser? I'm all for it. Frankly, Welsh says, glancing around in case anyone is listening, I heard the same rumors everyone else has, that Fraser's got himself a girl. And Ray has to bite his lip to stop himself from giggling hysterically and blurting out, yeah, me. By all accounts, it's pretty serious, Welsh almost whispers, like he's ashamed to be caught gossiping. And so I figured, you know, that's gotta be hard for you to take. And suddenly he sees where Welsh is going with this, especially since Fraser is such an idealistic bastard, Welsh adds, and all at once his face is hard. I figured you could probably take a lot of crap from the good constable, but you'd probably draw the line at true fucking love. Holy shit! Welsh thinks this is about Stella. Well, hell, of course he does. Everything used to be about Stella. But he's never heard Welsh sound so savage before. Exasperated, yeah. Frustrated, sarcastic, furious, proud even. Yes. Savage and bitter? No. I figured. And Welsh is talking to himself now. Ray's just there to stop him from looking crazy. That Fraser got all gooey over some girl, and it got under your skin. God knows women have broken up partners before. And Fraser? Welsh is shaking his head slowly, lost in thought. Fraser's one of your obsessive, romantic types. God, you weren't here for the last debacle, Welsh adds, suddenly snapping to. But believe you me, Kowalski. Fraser in love? You better duck and cover. He's not like us, Welsh finishes, tapping the tabletop significantly. And for a moment, Ray can't think what he means. Not like us? Not American? Or does he mean, could he possibly mean, bisexual? Ray stares at Welsh in horrified fascination for a moment before the right word floats into his mind. Not bisexual. Divorced. Ray doesn't know if he's sweating at the thought of being outed, or the idea that Welsh's gate might swing both ways, but he's suddenly sweating like a pig. His own gate is a well-oiled machine, and he's always feared that it was visible on his face, in his posture, in the shape of his hands. I'm ACDC. It's half the reason he's learned to punch first and save being verbal for later. But Welsh seems focused on the idea of Ray Kowalski, broken-hearted husband. He doesn't seem to suspect the existence of Ray Kowalski, cocksucker, or to imagine that the two of them might coexist in the same body. On the one hand, this is a relief. On the other hand, it kind of makes Ray feel lonely. Even Welsh doesn't really know him, and Welsh has known him longer than almost anybody. I'll talk to him, Ray says finally. Find out where we stand and get back to you, okay? Fair enough, Welsh says with a satisfied nod, and drains his glass. He calls Fraser the next morning at the consulate and he can tell right away that Fraser's surprised to hear from him. "Hey," Ray says in his best, casual work voice, "why don't you come on down to the station today?" Fraser doesn't say anything for a moment, and Ray feels a stab of deep affection for him. Fraser's trying so hard to play this game right. When Fraser finally does speak, he sounds like he doesn't have a doubt in the world. His voice is full of its usual polite confidence. "Certainly, Ray. I'll be there as soon as I can." The guy in the red serge shows up around 11, and it's almost like old times. Almost. Fraser doesn't perch on the edge of his desk or twirl his hat flirtatiously. And how does it take him until now to understand that that was flirting? Now, when it's gone, he can see it so clearly, the hat going round and round in Fraser's nimble fingers. Hypnotizing. Ray doesn't kick back in his chair and pop a toothpick into his mouth and ask Fraser stupid, teasing questions. His mouth, Fraser's fingers, some detectives they were. He doesn't get up and pat Fraser's shoulder before slinging an arm around his neck and saying, "Fraser, old buddy, you look like a man who can use some coffee," before walking him over to the break room. Instead, the guy in the red suit shuffles awkwardly and says, "Hello there, Ray." And right then, Ray knows that Welsh is right, and that he ought to be thinking about finding a new partner. Their moment is over. He stares down at his desk blotter and says, "Fraser, we have to talk." When they were partners, they used to talk in the men's room, but that feels way too dangerous now. Ray can't look straight at Fraser, because he keeps seeing the guy he's fucking, that amazingly wonderful guy, inside that weird Mountie uniform. It doesn't fit him right. Ray can see that now. Fraser's always tugging at his collar, straightening his lanyard, pulling down his sleeves. Fraser, his Fraser, the guy who fucks him till he trembles. This guy isn't a man who was made to wear a dress uniform. He gets up and heads towards interrogation room 2. Fraser follows at a respectful distance, then shuts the door behind them. "Fraser," Ray says, pacing the room. He still can't look at Fraser directly, so he's just a blur in Ray's peripheral vision. "I had drinks with Welsh, and..." He stops and shoves his fingers into his hair. "Fuck, this is hard. This is so damn hard." Fraser, for the millionth time, saves his bacon. "Lieutenant Welsh thinks you should get a new partner," Fraser says quietly, "and it isn't a question." "Well, I can understand his reasoning." Fraser turns his face away. "Under the circumstances, I'm not much used to..." Reason 563 why Welsh is right and Ray should get a new partner is how he's got Fraser shoved up against the wall of the interrogation room and how he's kissing him. Because after all these months, this is how thin his control is. He shoves his hands up under Fraser's red wool tunic, and fuck, he's never kissed the Mountie before. But this is the end of Vecchio and the Mountie anyway. Fraser moans softly into his mouth and lets Ray go at him for a while before gently kissing Ray's name onto his lips. "Ray, Ray, not here." And then Fraser's hands are grasping Ray's hair and tugging his head back. "Ray," Fraser repeats softly, looking into his eyes. And Christ, it feels like Ray's heart is breaking. "You don't want to do this here." One night, just after Stella landed her first big job at, what were they called? Asshole, Grubman, and McCormick, something like that. He went to see her late, after work. He was still walking a beat then, and he didn't get off till 11, but he stopped at the all-night deli on the corner and bought a huge bunch of flowers out of a green plastic bucket. He remembers walking past the security guy and down the heavily carpeted hall to Stella's office, which was small but nicely furnished with a mahogany desk and a bookcase and a sideboard thingy. Stella seemed pleased to see him and stood up, and he grinned at her and pushed the heavy wood door shut behind him. 2 steps and he'd taken her into his arms. She smiled and turned her face so that he could kiss her cheek, her ear, her mouth, and she moaned a little as he slid his hands down her cream silk-covered back to cup her ass. He thought she was with him. He was pretty sure she was with him. That is, until he slid his palms up her thighs, hands sliding up under her skirt. Stella let out a shocked laugh. "Ray!" "Let's do it right now," Ray murmured into her hair. "Let's do it right here." "We can't," she said, sounding oh so reasonable. "Sure we can," Ray said, and lifted her up onto the sideboard. She squealed with laughter, and for a moment Ray could see her considering it, and so he leaned in and kissed her again, giving her the best, deepest kiss he had, wanting to sweep her away in it. Talking would be the death of this thing. He knew that instinctively. His hands reached for her breasts, cupped them through the silk, thumbed the hard, sweet buds of her nipples, and... Ray! Breathless now, she turned her face to the side so that Ray's face is buried in a cloud of bright gold hair. God, she's so lovely. You can't stand. Ray! And her voice is sharper now, and she's pushing hard at his shoulders. Not here! And he's taking a stumbling step backwards. She's angry. Why is she angry at him all of a sudden? He can still see her nipples through her blouse, and he himself is painfully hard and leaking into his blue uniform pants. Stella, they're closed. Nobody's here. It's past 11. And boy, was that the wrong thing to say, because now she's sneering at him and saying, "Yeah, Ray, that shows how much you know. This place never closes, okay? They're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Okay, but... And you don't seem to understand the kind of competition I'm facing or the kind of pressure I'm under. But Stella, shove it, Ray." And that was that. Fraser, at least, isn't pissed off at him. Fraser, at least, seems sort of sad. "You don't want to do this here, Ray," Fraser murmurs. And Fraser's at least kissing him during the letdown. "We're far too exposed." Kiss. "Anyone could walk in." Kiss. "There's a two-way mirror on the..." But when Ray grabs his lapels and crushes Fraser's mouth with his own, Fraser doesn't push him away. Fraser doesn't tell him to shove it. Fraser just opens his mouth and strokes Ray's tongue with his own, kissing him and kissing him until the words sink in. "Exposed. Walk in. Two-way mirror." Ray jerks backwards, gasping, suddenly sure that Dewey's standing at the door, or Franny, or Welsh, or... The door's still closed, thank God. But the pounding of his heart is feeding fear instead of lust. "Maybe," Ray begins breathlessly, "maybe we should get out of..." The knock on the door is loud, so fucking loud, like a jackhammer cracking his skull, and he reacts without thinking, sweeping up one of the cheap metal chairs and hurling it against the two-way mirror, which shatters, glass spraying everywhere. Ray, panting, turns and gets a glimpse of Fraser's pale face as Fraser slowly drops his raised arms. A moment later, he hears the sound of running feet, and then the door's banging open, and there's four cops crowding into the doorway, Huey in front, all of them crouching and pointing their guns into the room. Ray gets a glimpse of Franny behind them, pushed out of the way. She looks tiny and frightened. They all slowly take in the fact that no one's in the room except Vecchio and the Mountie, and then they're letting their gun barrels drop. Franny says in a small, breathless voice, I just wanted to ask if you... Christ, you guys!" And she presses a palm to her heaving chest. I'm gonna go sit down." She turns and wanders away through the crowd of cops, and Fraser frowns worriedly. "Wait," he says, "Francesca." And in a moment, he's gone after her, hat in hand. Ray brushes his palms together, brushes glass shards off his t-shirt, and crunches his way over to the door, passing a stunned-looking Huey, passing Mitchell, Watkins, and Sersnick, without so much as a whatnot. At the end of the gauntlet is Welsh, like a black cloud, waiting. The bullpen is silent, except for the sudden, occasional ringing of phones. "I'm gonna need a new partner," Ray tells Welsh. And then he crosses to his desk and gets back to work.